The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on July 26, 2020. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning, everybody. It's good to see you all this morning. Well, today I thought maybe I would just simply ask once again, as I did last time I was here, just to see if you have any questions. If not, there's things that I can talk about, but I thought I always like to hear from you from time to time, and so if you have anything that's on your mind regarding our practice or the teachings, please, here's your chance now if you want to ask a question. With everything that's going on in the world today, perhaps there's something on your mind.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Vince.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Okay, just clarification. I think I've got some idea, but in the, form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. And I understand that's unity and difference. Is that the essence of it? I can understand, I think, the form is emptiness and no permanence and so on, but the emptiness is form. That's kind of escapes me. Could you elaborate on that?
Sure, yeah. What are we talking about when we talk of emptiness? It isn't that emptiness is some particular thing. That say form, when we say form is emptiness, it isn't some particular thing or quality that form has. If we're thinking of it that way, then it is difficult to reverse it. But then emptiness is form too. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. But emptiness is, and we say, as you'd mentioned there too, which applies, but that things are constantly changing and moving about, whatever. And so this is, there's no perpetuating form or something like this. And so we say, and that's a mark of emptiness, or its emptiness, perhaps we're still thinking, the emptiness of the form, something like that. But this is still thinking that we have form there, that there actually is something there, whether it's a thing, a physical thing, or just even a thought, an idea, or a feeling, an emotion that we can identify and put a label to, we think there's something there. Of course, we'll even say there as if there's a there there. But this is not the full understanding that form is emptiness. Emptiness itself is form. What we have is emptiness. But emptiness is not a thing. It's not a thing unto itself. Emptiness itself is empty. It's just this emptiness. But it obviously is this manifestation of forms of various kinds, physical, mental, emotional. This cannot be denied. But the idea that there's something behind all of these things that seem to be showing up, that these things actually have substance, this is the thing that when we're still puzzling over what this means, form is emptiness, emptiness in particular is form, we're still looking at form and emptiness as though we're talking about some substantial stuff here that then has this quality of being empty. And that just simply isn't the case. The emptiness itself means that we don't actually have this stuff as such, as stuff unto itself. What we have are the appearances of the form. You know, those appearances can appear in all sorts of ways, not just visual, but in all sorts of ways, emotionally and also audibly and just in any number of ways. But the fact that we can't actually get hold of the essence of any of these things, right now in the Busho class we're talking about this, that we can't get hold of this form. It is empty of any kind of a substantiality. This is what we need to wake up to. The last class that we had, I held up a spoon. I don't have the spoon with me now, but while the class lasted, By the way, if any of you haven't tuned in and you're going to, we only got about half the class before our Zoom went kaput, at least mine did. Anyway, but if I hold up something like this, we can say that it's obviously there's form there, there's material stuff there. But as we go in for a close look, and we can do this in any number of ways, but just simply going in physically for a close look, we just keep moving in on it. Well, eventually we end up, as I pointed out last Wednesday, we end up with just quarks and electrons, which aren't anything at all. In terms of, they don't hold any dimension, they don't have any size to them. We can't pinpoint them at any particular location. All of these qualities that we attribute to physical things seems to vanish. And yet still, there seems to be stuff here. Okay, and here it is. All this is showing up, but it is empty. Whatever is showing up here is empty of any kind of substantiality unto itself, but we attribute substantiality to the things that we see and feel and think and taste and all of this. And that's where we're going. So all this is saying, when pointing out that this is empty, the various forms and things that are appearing here, these are appearances, but they are empty of any kind of substantiality. And so what we have then is just emptiness. But this emptiness is form, is taste, is color, is sound, is feeling. But immediately we'll conceptualize that experience. That means we're turning it into stuff. And in our minds, we actually don't turn it into stuff. In fact, there's also no we or I or me that's formed either. It's just an appearance that's taking place. But with this, there's a strong tendency then to take the various things that are appearing here, not seeing them as non-substantial, seeing them as actually substantial, seeing them as actual form, that there's this form is signaling us of the embodiment of some particular thing here. And we take it that way. And then if we hear this term emptiness, our strong tendency then is to think that, well, we're talking about some quality that this thing has. And that's what we need to see finally, is that we don't actually have the thing as something that can be gotten hold of. Obviously we have the appearance, that's undeniable, but the substance that we attribute to that appearance just simply isn't there. And that's why it's referred to as empty. Whatever it is that's appearing is empty of substantiality, period. So in the Bushō class we're looking at, my teacher used to speak of this, that is the simple way of speaking of reality is, here it is, undeniable, here it is. Do you want to deny any of this? Right now, you're occupied with something, I hope, at least, you know, you're looking at the screen and listening and whatever. Here it is, this isn't nothingness. But the other thing is, Katagiri Roshi used to say, what is it? It wasn't just him either. Other teachers use this device, and I do on myself on occasion. I've attributed to my teacher, where that's where I first heard it. Now, here it is, but what is it? And, of course, this what is it isn't inviting us to find the right answer now, but it might lead us, once we begin to look and look at things very carefully, we'll begin to realize you're not going to answer that. And the reason you're not going to answer that, which we can eventually see, is because, strictly speaking, you can't really say there is something there beyond the appearance. So it is this appearance, then, that is taking place. But this appearance is emptiness itself. And so if we see form of some kind, whether a thing or a thought or a feeling, and then we ask, what is this? We can see that it is just this emptiness as such. But this emptiness isn't emptiness like, you know, you go to the cookie jar and it's empty and you wanted a cookie or something and now you feel it's empty. Or maybe, you know, we're feeling some kind of a loss or something like this. And so we feel empty, we're emotionally drained or whatever. But we're not talking about something like this. We're talking about the actual nature of reality, which is empty of any kind of substantiality. That is why we can feel it, taste it, think it, see it. Were there substance in the naive way that we think that there is, nothing would be taking place. And with this understanding, when we can see it in just this way, we will also see now what consciousness is, what we're referring to as consciousness, or what this aspect of the experience that is taking place here. This becomes abundantly clear at that point. Also, it's very clear what mind is as such. The word is very strange here, but mind, or what the word we attribute to just this, it's just mind. As Wang Po said, there's only the one mind besides which nothing exists. Seems very strange. I remember when I first came upon that, somehow it seemed to ring true in a strange sort of way for me. I thought there's something to that, but I had no idea what he was referring to at that time. But eventually, you know, we can see this for ourselves, and that's what we need to do. But it's when we're actually engaged with the world in some way, particularly if we can get our minds to kind of settle down a little bit so we're not totally overwhelmed with various things and distractions, and just pay very careful attention to just some simple thing that's actually unfolding in the moment, just sitting here breathing, without talking to ourselves, without labeling anything, without grasping, and without even assuming that there is something other than the actual immediate direct experience of what we otherwise might call breathing. And actually, breathing is already pretty well down the road of conceptualizing. So we can actually go much further than just simply stopping at something like breathing while we're sitting in meditation or something of this sort. Also, we can learn to not sit in meditation with the idea that we're doing something, or that we're getting hold of something, or that we're improving ourselves, or something of this sort. This is Yakusan sitting there, doing nothing. As he said, when his teacher came by, he's checking on him. You had a very good student here. What's your understanding here, Yakusan? So he asked him, what are you doing? And he says, I'm not doing anything. Oh, so you're sitting idly. Can I still catch you on something? And he said, if I were sitting idly, I'd be doing something. I just said, I'm not doing anything. Of course, he probably could see at that point that even the word I is superfluous at that point. What is it that's not doing anything? But his teacher asks, well, what is it you're not doing? And he said, even Buddhas don't know. Even Buddhas don't. Even the awakened do not. And this is conceptual knowing that he speaks. The awakened certainly can see what's going on. And that when we actually see what is going on, this is knowing. But this is actual knowing. Knowing with a, I would italicize that kind of knowing if I was printing it out. Like with seeing. It's actually seeing or knowing or realizing the true nature of what is taking place in this moment. And it is without substance. It is emptiness. And it is also with a thorough understanding of this, we can see directly that it could not be otherwise. It could not be something other than just this. The only alternative, there's a reason it can't be that either, but the only alternative would be nothingness, which clearly this isn't. This isn't nothing. And this is, sometimes I'll invite you just to just contemplate that for a little bit. And what contrasts with that in our conceptual mind? Well, then there we have something. So there we have that great question in philosophy posed by Leibniz 300 years ago or so. You know, why is there something rather than nothing? But this is all based on a conceptual mistake that we all tend to make unless we wake up. You know, we see the stuff that we see or think or taste or touch. Yeah, there it is. We don't see it as emptiness. We see it as substance, that there is a thing there. And of course, there's me too, who I taste this, I think this, I feel this. Yeah. This is how we live out our lives. And because this is not a correct understanding of what's actually taking place, we live kind of like the flat earther at the shore, puzzling over, does the earth just go on forever? Or does it have an edge out there? And then we'll ask all kinds of questions, not realizing that neither of these possibilities that we've conjured up have anything to do with reality. That's really where most of us are, until we can actually see that what's really taking place here is other than what it appears to be. We do see the appearances, that's what we've got. But the nature of what's behind these appearances, emptiness, is something other than the appearances themselves, or what the appearances would suggest in very powerful ways, that there's stuff out there and here I am here taking it all in. That's the usual understanding, and it's very understandable. We all understand in this way, up until the point where we begin to, but it can happen quite suddenly, where you suddenly realize what the actual experience is, and there's no substance in it. So I don't know, Vince, did I help you?
Yeah.
So emptiness is, so what we have here is emptiness, but this emptiness has this appearance of form. It has other appearances as well, but form is certainly there.
Yes, that helped a lot, Steve. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Vince. Anything else? Linda.
Hi, Steve.
Yeah, hi, Linda.
A week ago, the Dharma Field email had as recommended reading the control chapter of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, which I thought was great and really spoke to our present circumstances. But in there's a sentence that says, a Zen master once said, to go eastward 1 mile is to go westward 1 mile.
Mm-hmm.
This is vital freedom. We should acquire this kind of perfect freedom. What is that pointing at?
Yeah, well, it's pointing at wholeness, totality. And to go east 1 mile is to go west 1 mile. In the conceptual breakup that we live with of the world, of course, now there's east and west and north and south and up and down and all these different directions. And there's here and there's there. But if we're seeing the world in terms of wholeness, in terms of, that would be in terms of emptiness, we could say, that's really not the best way to go, though, with that, with this particular thing. But we're seeing things in terms of wholeness. It is all the same, really. And to go east 1 mile, you're still here. To go west 1 mile, you're still here. To go north or south or up or down, you're still here. This aspect of the world and our experience in the world never changes. So that's kind of what he's referring there. When we remain just in the conceptual, and here I am, just my ego self here, separate and apart from other things, and now I go west or east or whichever direction or other sort of, I do this or I do that. Yeah, now there's distinctions being drawn, and the appearances of having traveled east or west, these are very strong, you know, and gripping. And they'll take us in such a way that we really think that there's a there as apart from here, and this sort of thing. Which isn't to say that there isn't. The awakened, they will honor these appearances. There appears to be a here as opposed to there. And we have to, you know, live with this in the world of birth and death, and where it appears like we come into the world, we persist for a time and move about and learn things and change and whatever else, and then we die, which is distressing for us usually. And that's kind of just how it is. And now, of course, here now, east and west makes quite a bit of difference. But for those who are awake, it's no different. It's still right here. This reality is right here. The opening of the merging of difference and unity, where it says right near the top anyway, at the beginning, in the path there are no southern or northern teachers, because to go north or to go south, you know, makes little difference. This was being written at a time when a lot was being made of the idea that the South, I believe it was the South that was more primitive or something like this. People thought in these terms, and they kind of looked down on people from the South because they were more crude and ignorant and this sort of thing. But what was in this teaching was just pointing out that it makes no difference. You know, North, South, East, West, makes no difference. So it's pointing to something else within human experience that's more subtle than what normally catches the eye. What catches the eye are the distinctions, the separations, and all the world is broken up into this and that and the next thing. And that's consciousness. And then with this, we apply certain values, you know. Well, I'm drawn to this, I don't like that, this is good, that is bad, and there we go. And we'll live all our lives this way. And it's a very troubling sort of way to live, and it really doesn't match reality, because reality is, here it is. And what is it? And even though we live with this, here it is, could we, yeah, we know it's here, here it is, but then we try to answer it, what is it? And when we do that, we break up the world into this and that, and give it names and labels, and some will be good, some will be bad, some will be indifferent to, but there we go. And that's fine. It's just that we're not living in accordance with reality. We're living out of something that we've imagined, and we don't even realize this. And it isn't even that we've imagined it, or that I've imagined it, or you've imagined it. It's not even that, because that's also part of the whole broken out stuff. It's a matter of just seeing directly that what we have always is, here it is, and now let's take care of it. What is it? You're not gonna nail it down. But let's just take care of this moment. This is what the Buddha's concern was in this moment. Now we have suffering, we have pain, we have misery, and we can live in a way that will perpetuate that and exaggerate that and just keep it going. We start building things out of that. But what way is this to live? It is not to live out of awakening or enlightenment. It is to live out of our own little narrow ego self here, where we're worried about things. Things might threaten me, you know, so that's bad. I want to get rid of those. And there's things that I love, I'm attracted to, I must acquire that. There we are. But we don't realize, we don't see that to go east 1 mile is to go west 1 mile. We're not seeing things from wholeness. And it is simply a matter of seeing that. But it's not so easy. And we do see it, actually. That's our perceptual experience, actually. We're always with it. This is why we also have a teaching that says, you are Buddha. Even right now, you are Buddha. Because this is the actual experience that we're all having. And it's the same experience for all of us. But we get caught by what we think. We get caught by what we imagine. What we fear. We get caught by seeing the non-emptiness of the forms and the thoughts and the feelings. And there's the root of all of our suffering and pain and misery and confusion. It is a matter of seeing through that. We can't see, this is what I was going to say though, that we can't really see through that by seeing through it directly. There's nothing there to see in a sense. But what we can see is how we get caught. Awakening or enlightenment is nothing more than waking to delusion. We can finally see how it is we're deluded, that we're confused, that we're buying into an illusion. It's a profound illusion, it's a subtle one, it's all pervasive, it's not easy to see through. But this is why we're having the kinds of pains and miseries and sufferings and hatreds and terrors and all the things that we suffer from. But the way to see through that, that's what we can see. We can see delusion. We can see the confusion. We can see the mayhem. What we won't see, though, is the cure. We won't see the wholeness, the total, because that never forms as an object. But if we stop buying into all the various factions and things that we'll latch onto or run from or fight with or whatever it might be, chase after, if we can see through that, the wholeness is already there. It's already here. That's what this is, right here. And it always remains what? Meaning that we're not going to put something. Our temptation will be to put something there, but we can learn not to do that. So I don't know, did I answer you, Linda, there? Is that okay?
Yes, thank you, Steve.
Okay. So anything else? Mike, you have a question.
Yes, I also asked Steve Matuszak about this and got a very good answer, but I wanted to ask you, when strong emotions arise, what should my practice be?
It's the same practice. Just come back to here right now, settle down, I don't mean necessarily that you have to be sitting on a cushion, no. We can learn that mind and let that be us wherever we go. But is the mind of coming back, this is what I was kind of saying to Linda there at the end there, that we can see where we're deluded. We can see the confusion. We can see the thing we're getting off here. The very fact that we're feeling anxiety or whatever it might be indicates that we're getting caught up and not in correct seeing. We know something is wrong there in that sense, wrong in the sense that, you know, this isn't seeing things correctly in accordance with reality. So all we have to do is to recognize that this is where we are. We're kind of slipping into this kind of mind, and we can come out of that. Again, it isn't something there for us to chase after, you know, but we can notice, you know, when we're getting off. So, and little by little, if we stare it down, whatever it is that's causing our fear, our anxiety, or our lust, or, you know, we want to chase after this or want whatever it might be, once we learn to watch that, don't make anything up about it, but just see what it is and see the grip that it has on your mind in some way, and to notice the state of mind and the feeling that you might have at this point, which underneath it all, it'll settle down to a point where we realize it's a great deal of dis-ease here in the world when we live in that way. But it is seeing things from the standpoint of the partial, of the standpoint of ego, the standpoint of self, separated and apart from all of that. It is to see that there's east and west, and I don't want this direction, I want to go the other way, is to live out of that rather than living out of wholeness. And by the way, too, Mike, you're kind of a physics guy a little bit, but this is the same sort of thing that physicists, I've mentioned this somewhere, I think probably in a Wednesday night class, and I'm not going to spend any time with this, but with Bell's theorem, you know about that. And what he discovered, they were having a problem with trying to show that here seems to be different from there. And there were things that made this somewhat questionable. So Bell wanted to, John Stuart Bell, he wanted to settle this once and for all. And it was back in 1964, and he set up a very simple mathematical proof. It was required no more than arithmetic. Which just about anybody who's had an elementary education could probably handle. And he showed that if we have these relationships, then we have locality. We have here that is different from there. And when these things were carried out, it turns out that no, these things don't know. That's called Bell's inequality. And it shows that the physical world is a non-local. In other words, it's just here. It's a non-local reality. And yet, it doesn't seem to be that way. Yeah, appearances are deceiving. The world is not the way it appears. This is what the ancient, the awakened ones have pointed out for hundreds of years now. And it is really quite obvious. And so, because the actual world, the perceptual experience, which is the perceptual experience, is of wholeness and totality, we can finally wake up to that. We're already experiencing this. We already even know this, actually. What it is that we're distracted by here and there, this and that, one thing or another, and me and everything else. That's that we're distracted. This is a distraction. It doesn't require any heavy-duty ideas about math and physics and all this kind of stuff, or even heavy-duty reading of Dogen and Wang Po and Nagarjuna and it's just a matter of paying very careful attention to what is being experienced. It has nothing to do with how smart you are or anything else. Dogen said, between the dull and the sharp-witted, there's no distinction. It's just a matter of learning to settle down and pay very careful attention to what is going on. Before you say anything about it, before you equate it with anything, before you compare it, before you ask yourself questions. So maybe, well, if I just did it this way a little bit, would that change this? Or maybe you go ask the teacher that, or maybe you just decide that for yourself or whatever. But you're thinking, you're grasping, you're talking to yourself. Recognize that you're doing that. And while you're doing that, what you're doing is making everything out there solid and distinct and separate. And that's the opposite of waking up, where you realize directly that these, yes, there are appearances there, and we need to honor that, but there's no solidity to it in the way that we naively think. Then we can wake up to what is actually taking place here. And it has nothing to do with how much you study, or, you know, it doesn't even really have anything to do with how much you sit. But it does have to do with having that mind of Sanzen, which is meditation being carried out. That would be perfectly. No, I don't think anybody can do that. I certainly can't. I kind of doubt that anyone could. But we can at least aim at that. We kind of know what that is. And that is just to settle your mind, come back to this, and learn to stop talking to yourself and to stop picking everything up as though it were solid and real and out there and separate and apart from me, making myself now solid and real and separate and the source of all the pain. Or it will appear as the source of all of that. So anyway, I just thought I'd tack that in there too, Mike. So it is a matter of just calming the mind. Learn to stop talking to yourself. Just pay attention. Just give yourself, like with the formal meditation, just give yourself the opportunity, and you can come back to this on a regular basis, where you've eliminated most of the stuff in your schedule for the next 30 minutes or however long it might be, and you just sit down. Stuff will come up in the mind. Don't do anything about it. Like Yaka-san, just don't do anything. just observe. Our tendency will be, something's gonna make my mind. Who said that? Nobody's telling you to make your mind quiet. But if you don't worry about it, your mind will start to settle down more and more. It never goes perfectly quiet for too long. And that's really not the point. The point is, though, at some point you'll see the insubstantiality of what is appearing here. Not the nothingness of it. There's no excuse. We can't ignore it, what is taking place around us. But it doesn't have the kind of weight and solidity that we otherwise grant to it. And we can wake up to this, and when we truly see that, when we truly know that, it's a radically different life. So, okay, then Ken.
Hi.
Yeah, hi, Ken.
Could you talk, please, about the difference between Zazen and Shikantaza?
Well, yeah, Zazen, literally Zazen, Za means to sit, and Zen, that is the meditation. So the Za is sitting in Japanese, and Zen is the meditation, so we can just call it sitting meditation. But Shikantaza, yeah, we can have Shikan Zazen, but the Taza, Shikan, this is Shi and Kan, this is being aware, being present, and tranquility. So that the tranquility is with the mind settled and quiet, but also very present with what is taking place. Some forms of this start out with you focusing on a particular thing of some sort, whether it's a physical thing, a candle, a bell, or the sound of a bell, or something else, or else maybe a mantra, something you're repeating in your mind or something like this. But I don't advise that. And the reason for that is that that's dualistic, and the reality that we can wake up to is non-dualistic. And if you're using that as a way to get there, and we're probably thinking of it in those terms if we're thinking dualistically, you're going to have a big hurdle sooner or later to try to get over. So I don't advise that. It is a matter of then just settling down. And following the breath is not a bad place to begin. That's following the breath without counting it, without saying anything about it, in and out and stuff like this. It just wordlessly following what is taking place. Breath is very good because it is something that just continues on in spite of ourselves. Yet at the same time, it is something we can capture and get hold of. And so it's like it seems to belong to the subjective world. And yet at the same time, it's objective because we can forget all about it. And yet we come back to there it is, just like that bell or candle on the floor I put in front of me. Yeah, it's still there after we've drifted off. Yeah, breath is like that too. But unlike the candle or the bell or something out there, the breath also seems to be me. I can right away get hold of it and control it in some way. You can't really do that with your other bodily function. Try to do that with your liver function or your heartbeat or something. Not so easily done. But the breath is unique in this way. It seems to be right in this vicinity between the me and the not me. The appearance of me and not me. So just see if you can kind of keep your mind there. And then just, well, if we say concentrated on that, I wouldn't even really put it that way. But just keep it in that vicinity. If you get it concentrated, pretty soon you're turning things back into things again. But just when you notice your mind is wandering off, you're thinking about something, you're worried about something, whatever it might be, just come back, because the breath is still there. Just like the candle would still be on the floor, but that's going to be clearly something separate from you. Come back to the breath, which isn't so distinctly separate from what you might otherwise call you. Just come back to that. And with this settling the mind, keeping the mind quiet, and noticing if you start to get agitated or whatever, just come back to this. Come back. Now, this, if you can start to do this, get these two working together, this is Shikan. And then Ta, in the Shikan Taza, this is where you're hitting the exact point. You're doing this just so. It's like, I don't know, was it in Aikido or something like that, where you're supposed to hit a point on your opponent's head with the tip of the sword or something like that. I don't know. But it's something like that, where you hit it just so. Not one atom off. You know, that's Ta, if you can do it that way. And then Za just means to sit. So this is sitting with that kind of, we can call it meditation, Shikan Ta Za. But the Zazen is just referring basically to sitting meditation. But of course, in this Zazen, yes, it could be Shikan Taza. But that's what Shikan. And then my teacher, Katagiri Roshi, he would also talk about things like the Shikan, you know, this being right there and yet at the same time settled. You can have this with, he used to talk about Shikan basketball. But you can apply this to other sorts of things too, where you're settled and right there. You might call this what, in the groove or in the what are the terms that they have for stuff like that. But where you're just right there, you know, you're right with it at that time. That's kind of Shikan, and doing this perfectly. But in the case of the meditation here, it is the, like with Yakusan, not doing anything. And doing this with full concentration and with a settledness of mind, just hitting it just so. And that's what we can learn to do. And gradually, we can learn to take that with us. This is called Sanzen, and if we're doing it perfectly, and never mind about doing that perfectly. You might hit it once in a while, but this is basically what it is. When we can approach that, when we're kind of in this vicinity, now this is a mind. Like Dogen says, Sanzen has nothing to do with sitting or lying down. So it doesn't have to be in the sitting posture. Though I do recommend you do that on a regular basis. But you can take this with you wherever you go. So whether it's playing basketball or any number of other things. You know, you're writing a paper, you know, whatever it might be. But you can just have your mind. You can find this mind and come back to this. A settled mind and really present with what is taking place. And that's the Shikan. So I don't know, does that help you there, Ken?
Yes, thank you. It sounds like you might start out in Zazen, but on a good day,
I wouldn't think in these terms.
No.
Just sit down, and even whether you're sitting down or not, you could Shikan doing dishes. You know, I mean, we can find this mind anywhere. Here's the other thing, too. This is what I was going to talk about, actually, if nobody had a question. So maybe I'll get to it anyway. But in the sitting that we do, very often people, well, even in our desire, when the Zoom thing kind of started here, and people wanted to sit together with Zoom, and I kind of frowned on that a bit. Because, and the reason, after what I've said and all today, though, maybe I can look at it as pointed out this way, that the reason I was speaking in this way, because I know from experience that if we want to sit like that, sit in that kind of way, or any particular way at all, or feel like I got to put in my time, oh, I didn't sit yesterday, I'm going to sit extra today, stuff like that, we're weighing it out. What are we doing here? We're thinking of all of this stuff in terms of solidity, in terms of non-emptiness. We're seeing it in those kinds of terms, and as opposed to just take this up and do this. And you can do this at any hour of the day, no matter what the activity. Sometimes it'd be pretty subtle if you can do this while you're having a conversation, but still, even there, you can have that mind. But we can finally learn to do this. But that's what this is. And yes, it is also a good idea to do this on a regular basis. And by that, the most effective thing you can do there is to do, when I say a regular basis, I mean like at the same time you have your weekly schedule set out for yourself and hit those times. And if something's happening and you can't, don't worry about it. That's just making your mind upset and disturbed. But to the extent that you can, just take this up and do it on a regular basis and come back to it regularly. But not with the idea that I'm doing this so that I will, because now you're doing something. You're not sitting like Yaka-san. So you have to get rid of all the ideas about why you sit and all that. It's been, 30, 40 years now, and I have no idea. I have no ideas about why I sit and why I practice this. None. And I'm not joking. That got cleared up for me quite some time ago. And it also makes all of this, in a sense, very easy. You don't have to fight with it or struggle with it. Which isn't to say there are times when my mind gets caught by something, I'll start to get upset or angry or something, I'll start to feel it coming up. But if we've learned to do this and practice it on a regular basis, we can catch that when we see it happening and bring ourselves back to just this. That's how we can do this practice. So don't do it with any ideas about what it is you're doing, or even with the idea that this is good for me or I need this. Don't think in these terms at all. All you're doing there is solidifying yourself and solidifying something out there that's separate and apart from you that you need, you got to get, you have to... Just stop thinking in those terms. Just live out of this, what's taking place right here, right now. As Bell said, Mike, we don't have here as opposed to there. It's just here. So we're always here. So you don't need to think about getting somewhere else or progressing or something like that. Dogen never talks in these terms. Or we can progress along the bodhisattva line or whatever. This is still being caught up in seeing things in terms of this and that. This is still being caught up in seeing things in terms of permanence. It's not seeing things in terms of the actual fluid life that is unfolding moment by moment. All we need to do is to learn to just stay here as best we can from moment to moment. Catch ourselves when we're wandering off in some way. And in the middle of all of this, to take up a regular practice where we deliberately clear out the schedule, whatever, make it very light, and then just sit down for however many minutes. And come back to that on a regular basis. And that's it, really, in a nutshell. So, did that help, Ken?
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. I don't see any other hands now. What time do we... Oh, my goodness, we used up most of the hour, so... All right, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.